Oh, we said we weren't going to talk about Revell, remember? Oh, cut that out.
Hello and welcome back. Season 2 is here.
Thanks for joining us for another episode.
I'm James Skiffins.
And I'm Malcolm Childs. And we are Just Making Conversation,
where we discuss the ins and outs of the model-making hobby that brings us joy and pain in equal measure.
From the greasy sprues to the gloss coats and everything in between, we are going to be just making conversation. Remember, there are other podcasts you can listen to.
Plastic Model Mojo.
The Scale Model Podcast.
Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
Model Geeks.
The Sprue Cutters Union.
Small Subjects.
Built Sideways. Head to modelpodcast.com for all the links.
If you enjoyed our podcast, consider leaving us a 5-star review. It helps promote the podcast to more people to enjoy.
Showing your support is as easy as making a coffee. In fact, why not go over to buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast and do just that. Your support will help go towards making the podcast and its content just that little bit better. In this here very episode, we will be just making conversation about opening a can of worms within the model making hobby. What are those subjects that often become a trigger?
We all do things different, using different methods and products to reach the desired outcome of our models. But why is it that what we do has such a negative effect with others and that becomes a can of worms? But what are we referring to as a can of worms? How do worms affect our hobby?
So why does the simple hobby of model making cause such conflict? What are the elements that see long drawn out battles on social media for those of us unfortunate to get caught up in these things? Before we get kicked in and deep down and dirty with our subject today, should we go through some of the comments we've had?
Yes, let's do that. First up is John Hope, who bought us some coffee. Thank you very much for the coffee.
Thank you.
Great light-hearted model podcast filled with humour. Probably only us Brits get. Love it. Thanks, John.
Yeah, that's nice.
When it comes to British humour, Google is not often your friend, so beware.
Oh, no. No. Like rusty trombones and things. Don't look them up.
Anorak, say no more.
Yep.
Next up is Ray Davis. He says, this was a great episode. He's talking about our last one to do with trickery and very handy links. I'll check out it soon, i.e. the JS miniatures and small scale lights. He likes adding lights to his models.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
That was up your street.
Yeah, each their own. Mm-hmm. Each their own.
Although we do have some breaking news about electricery and you, don't we? But we'll come back to that.
No, we don't. moving on. It wasn't a comment. It was something said to me something online on a Zoom call, and they said that we didn't talk about lights on cars and trucks, things like that. So if you have a car sat there with its lights on, that's not going to be moving, is it? We didn't really talk about that because we mostly talk about flashing lights on starships. But yeah, I quite agree that lights on a car would be perfectly fine.
We touched on the subject, didn't we, when we talked about fire engines and their flashy lights and stuff?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, we did.
But we didn't talk about just the static lights.
No. Apologies for that. Can't talk about everything, can we?
No, we try.
There's be some limits. The next comment was from Tim Heppelstone. Again, this was left on our electronics Facebook post. He says, only tried it once in Revell's Enterprise. He's still recovering from the trauma, but I must admit it did end up looking cool. I think that's it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard, it's difficult, but it looks flashy and nice. Everyone likes a flashing light.
Our next comment from Raphael Shelton. Someone else doing amazing dioramas with lights is Boily Hobby Time on YouTube. And we've got an example link there that we will...
I don't know if you've looked, but it's it does like Star Wars stuff and the lightsabers are lit up. Very cool stuff. Thank you very much for commenting. That's great. Is that all of the comments?
That is all of the comments for this week. It's been a quiet week. A few bits and pieces going on. So, hey-ho.
Life.
But anyway, with that said and done, time for the can of worms is the subject of this light-hearted conversation you're listening to. What is a can of worms, Malcolm?
Like we talk about in our intro, and we have done for 1.5 seasons now, gloss coats and greasy sprues, and we can talk about everything in between.
Yep.
Don't actually talk about the gloss coats, and we don't talk about the washing of sprues, because those things open up a can of worms when you just start discussing those things in this hobby for some reason. But today we're going to discuss the can of worms, but not actually discuss the things that we're going to talk about, because that would open a can of worms. No, we're going to discuss what the can of worms is and why people argue and that kind of stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, so basically we're just going to tickle the ivories, if you like, in relation to what can of worms actually is, the subjects in which you may wish to avoid in a social media forum, because you will open up those worms.
We're going to tap on the can of worms, aren't we?
Yes, we're going to tickle and tease the can of worms.
We're going to shake it and rattle it. And...
no, don't shake worms. It's not good for them.
They're dead, right?
Well, it doesn't kill them, but it does give them a headache, which just aggravates them.
Being in a can without oxygen will kill them.
In time, yeah.
In time, yes. In a minute.
Anyway, we seem to have gone off on a tangent, strangely.
No way. So yeah, can of worms. The dictionary says can of worms is an informal phrase, if you like. It says it is a source of many unpredictable or unexpected problems. So it's a subject that you might not want to approach, because you opening a can of worms, you can imagine it would be messy and they'd be all over the place, like a box of frogs or a bag of cats.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And just by going there with the subject, you end up making a massive mess and no one's happy with you. Is that about right?
But there are those people, especially in the social media world, sometimes called keyboard warriors, which is a can of worms in itself, who will enjoy lighting the blue paper and standing back and watching to see what happens.
Are you talking about trolls now?
Well, trolls are a little bit step higher, if I'm honest, because trolls go out of their way to see... just how high the flames go. But anyway, a can of worms. So this was actually, I'm just going to go and link it to somebody that I haven't got a clue it was.
We're recording. One of the best time while we're recording to do some research about the podcast that we're recording. What better time spent?
So our listeners, of course, have thrown in a few subjects in which we can potentially talk about, which are a can of worms, which would be something like color modulation, the use of floor polish for your gloss coats, things like that. These are one of those cans of worms. And realistically, I've had the conversation about the floor polish on several occasions and the joys that it brings to people, and some just don't get it at all.
Without asking your opinion on floor polish, because that would literally open
can of worms.
Have you had conversations where you're trying to scoop up those worms?
Oh, God, yeah. You do get that. You know, it's like we use this particular example. Otherwise, I'm just going to open up loads more cans that seem to be sitting all over my desk. It really comes down to, if you want to make your hobby easy, you use the products that are closest to you and easy to obtain.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that goes across all of the whole spectrum of things. So even down to the kits, if I'm honest. And if you've got someone that has taken the time and trouble to use a product and got it to work for them in a way in which they're happy with, and it's easily obtained so they can continue to repeat that process and repeat that result is the word I'm looking for. Why would they change? Doesn't make sense to me. If it works, it works.
Yeah, I think that's probably a lot of where the conflict comes from, is the not understanding of someone else's point of view and not able to discuss it face to face as well. Yeah. So if, you're trying to explain your pencil and I'm using my pen, I'm trying to tell you that, you know, we spent all this money and it's really good. It writes upside down. It writes underwater. It writes backwards. Write in different languages. And you're telling me that, you know, you just use a pencil.
And you could sell me one, right?
So there's that as well. That's another
can of worms. Yeah. We're going to be doing this all the way through this podcast, tripping over cans all over the place.
Yeah.
It's like I've said that, you know, the paint I use is model color. And the main reason I use that is because that was the first product I went into trying for acrylics. It was readily available to me, to the point where it was being sold very cheaply. Mm-hmm. So I bought a lot of it, or lots of different colors anyway. And yeah, initially didn't like it, didn't work, didn't understand why it wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. But through perseverance and a bit of effort, I've learned how to use it.
Right. Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah.
So that's the product I use. And so it happens for me that I can put it through an airbrush or I can use it on a paintbrush, on a hairy stick. It does everything I want it to do.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
There are lots of other products out there and there's some amazing products out there, don't get me wrong. But I don't see the need to go and play. Unless suddenly the brand I use disappears off the shelf and you can't get it anymore, or there's this particular sort of style I want from my paint, then yeah, I might go and get some other products, try other products, but they would be all new to me. So I'm going to potentially have an issue that I'm going to have to relearn how to use that paint.
Is there a type of paint that you would, someone said to you, how I'm using blah, blah, blah type of paint, would you then get upset with that? Would you then say, hang on, no, you shouldn't be using that paint at all? I don't know. So if someone was going out and buying cheap poster paint from somewhere on their
Oh, house. Yeah, no. Well, I've had this conversation on two levels. I've had the, there's a cheap alternative. If you go into your local supermarket, they're selling a pack of 45 acrylic paints that work perfectly through my airbrush. Or indeed, dare I say it, another can of worms, Tamiya paint. Oh, you don't want to use that. Use Tamiya paint. Tamiya paint is the best. Mm. I can't get on with it. I bought Tamiya paint, and every time I've used it, it's not really worked very well for me.
Right.
Airbrush-wise, it's not too bad, but certainly if you want to use a hairy stick, no.
No, that's right, yeah. There are other people who would swear that Tamiya is the one for them. It's their bride-to-be.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm enjoying opening all these cans of worms. It's going to be great. I'm not sure I'm going to put it all back in the box. But it's the same with Airfix acrylic paint. A lot of people...
Are you talking about the Humbrol paints?
Yes, I'm talking about the Humbrol acrylic range.
Considering your new venture, that might be a good idea to get that just right.
Yes. I will agree that some of the paints have got some strange pigments in them and they are difficult, but they're not impossible to put through the airbrush. It's just a case of learning how to do so. And I do have some in my stash because, again, that's what was readily available at the time.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it all comes down to. You know, even to the point of doing dioramas and using certain products for making dioramas, a lot of it is not a fear factor, but
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not sure what I'm doing, and I don't want to make myself look like a Wally.
Approach when they get a kit that they haven't bought before or from a manufacturer they haven't bought before and open it up and start gluing plastic together, because what could go wrong, right?
Yeah.
And you know as well as I do, there are some kits are short runs, and putting them together is a nightmare.
Yeah, overcomplicated.
Yeah, some of them are overcomplicated. Some of them have got no location tags to them, so when you're trying to put the fuselage together, you haven't got a clue whether you're putting it right or wrong, and you know, all those sorts of things. I mean, there's loads and loads of different things with kits, but generally speaking, it doesn't put someone off. Generally, people will look at it and go,
"Oh, I'll give that a go. I like that subject."
Yep.
They may come across errors and issues as they go along. I've certainly had the experience where I've put up a post saying, oh, I've bought a special hobbies kit, and I've had just barrage of...
And good luck with that. You wait till you put it together.
The Revel hate as well. I don't know whether it's something that links into our gatekeeping discussion that we had. The gatekeepers of the hobby who believe that it's my way or the highway and will quite happily tell you that all of this particular manufacturer's kits are terrible, or always this paint will never work. Always you have to do it this way, and it opens that can of worms.
I think a lot of the time, Malcolm, we just got to that level now where we buy something and we expect it to work immediately as we want it to. And to a point, it's almost like saying, oh, well, you know, don't use a hairy stick, use an airbrush. It's amazing. Yes, it is, but you have to learn how to use it. I mean, there was a debate last week, I think it was. I saw a debate in social media about the fact that whether you should, the phrase was cheap knockoff airbrush or buy a branded airbrush. And most people went, oh, don't do that. Oh, no, really bad move. Don't do that. Buy a branded airbrush first off. Otherwise, if you buy a cheap knockoff, you'll be very disappointed. It won't work properly, and it's a waste of money.
Hmm.
I get the point. But also to another point, I don't get the point. So if I'm venturing into the world of airbrushing, for example, I'm only sort of repeating my journey. I looked at all the branded airbrushes and thought, oof,
That's a lot of money. I'm not sure I can afford that. Do I really need it?
It's a commitment.
And I thought, you know what? That stage, before I went into airbrushing, I painted my models with Humbrol enamels. That was what I brought up on. That's what I knew. And I'm watching all these amazing modelers with their airbrushes and this amazing paint called acrylic. What the hell is that? And thought I'd give it a go. So I didn't go out and buy a branded airbrush. I went out and bought a cheap knockoff. Potentially was going to come across a few things with it. So first of all, it might break easily. It might clog up. And also I was going to throw into the mix not only this newfangled airbrushy thing, but some wild and wicked paint called acrylic.
Acrylic.
So I was basically changing everything that I was doing in one hit and expecting,
oh, I'll press that button and it'll just come out like smooth silk over my model.
Did you expect it to work really, really well? Because obviously you would have also bought a compressor. You would have had probably a spray booth or warned the people in your house that you're going to be spraying this stuff. So it's quite a big overhaul to switch to an airbrush. Did you imagine it to be easy straight off? Because obviously you thought you're going to get better results if you're using an airbrush. That's why you did it.
I was suckered. So yes, to it, there was a point that I thought,
it's just going to be immense. Everything's going to change in my life.
And yeah, it did. My stress levels went right through the roof. One of the things I did is I bought this newfangled knockoff airbrush and compressor. I went down to my local hobby store and I picked up some Humbrol acrylics and some Revel Aqua, I think it's called, isn't it? Yeah, Revel Aqua colour, which have levels of skills to use as well. I initially hated it, absolutely hated it, and thought, you know what, I'm not sure I can be bothered with this. It's just too much effort. But I persevered and I'm glad I did. And like I said, as it happens, my journey, especially my paint journey, has progressed to a product I found and I managed to pick up cheaply, and I've learned to use it. But that, I think that was my biggest thing from the whole experience, was that I taught myself that A, nothing's instant, and B, you got to learn how to use your products. So as far as I'm concerned, if someone asked me, I'd say, yeah, buy a cheap knockoff, but be aware your paint ratios may create clogging and spitting and all that sort of stuff. And basically it comes down to a clean airbrush most of the time.
Yes. Why do you think it opens cans of worms then on social media? That discussion about having to spend lots of money on something, do you think it's because people have forgotten what it was like when they started? Or do you think it's because they were in a position that they were able to buy a very expensive airbrush straight off the bat and had a good experience? Do you think there's anyone who's bought a very expensive airbrush and not had a good experience? I bet there is.
Yeah, I know there is, because I'm one of them.
Ah. So why do you think it opens up cans of worms? Why is it not straightforward?
Well, it does, because people will say, oh, don't bother wasting your money. Buy a branded airbrush to start with and you'll miss out on all those idiosyncrasies and problems that you had with a cheap knockoff. You'll just dispense with that part of the process.
Buy cheap, buy twice, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And to a degree, I'm not going to lie, to a degree, they're right. You know, my father being a carpenter, he would always say to me,
buy the most expensive tools that you can afford to buy and look after them. They will last you a lifetime.
But as a hobby, you can afford to get cheaper alternatives, especially when you're starting up, because you might not like it. You might start this hobby and go,
do you know what? This is, I don't know what all these strange people do. This is weird. I don't like it at all.
Yeah,
I think that's part of the reason it's a can of worms, is because a lot of people say, well, no, you're wasting your money. Buy a proper one first. You cut out on all the things that go wrong, which is true, but also you lose the knowledge of overcoming those problems.
I'm with you. Yeah.
So when you get your expensive airbrush and you're suddenly starting having issues, you're like,
well, I was told this would never happen because it's an expensive airbrush.
No, it doesn't drive itself. It's not a Tesla.
No.
Tesla airbrushes. It's the next thing coming out.
I know, that's a good idea. I might talk to Mr. Tesla. Can you make a self-driving airbrush, please, Mr. Tesla?
Washing of sprues, that's always a bone of contention for me. I've seen. I don't do it personally.
No.
I don't. I will do it if it needs it. I've opened a very old kit once, and there was just a big brown blob at the bottom of this bag that was clearly the whatever agent they were using to release the thing. and I had to wash it because it literally was sticky and yuck.
Yeah.
But that's once in my God knows how many years of opening kits and stuff.
I can honestly say I've never washed a sprue, a model kit, or even a resin kit.
But you would if it was covered
oh,
in...
Oh, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. It's, well, yes. If someone had taken a dump in my kit, then yes, I probably would wash it. You're right. I may be tempted to throw it away, but...
I think people get upset when they say you must, you absolutely have to wash them every single time.
Yeah, it does come down to, those sort of things come down to the gatekeeping, doesn't it? I can think of at least a dozen people that are easily triggered by those sort of comments.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think, the other side of it as well, isn't just the comment, it's the comments that then come after it. So people giving advice.
Mm-hmm. Trying to help, yeah.
And people going, do this and do that and wash your sprues in a certain make of detergent and hang them by the left side of the sprue from your window, south-facing garden, blah, blah, whatever, you know. And then some will jump in and go, no, that's a load of old rubbish, blah, 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 and off it trots. And it comes back to that phrase I used earlier, you know, if that's what's worked for somebody, don't jump on them and go, well, no, you're wrong, you can't do that. Well, they clearly do, and it clearly works for them. So they may be of the mindset a little bit like myself, whereas, you know, I do something a certain way and it works for me. Why change it? I don't need to. It works. I don't need to look at other methods. If it stops working, then, yeah, I'll have to try a different method. Mm. Or if I come across a problem and go, why have I got this? Like, for example, talking about release agents, a classic example was the Edward kit I did in the 48-hour build, where my PE, I couldn't stick it with whatever glue I used. It just wouldn't stick on there. It was, for some bizarre reason, I had awful problems with it.
And do you think that was because it was greasy?
Some people have suggested to me that might be the case.
Well, you would have noticed.
I hadn't noticed. I didn't go out of my way to go and find out if that was the case. It's up there. I will bring it back down at some point and have a play with it. But yeah, that created a whole plethora of other problems that I hadn't come across.
Yeah.
Which that's the time where you turn to social media, because social media is a great thing because you can ask a question and you get loads of advice. The problem is with that advice is you'll get lots of different advice and you'll have to find your way through it to try and find the right answer that works for you.
I guess everyone's trying to help.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And social media is a great thing for that. You know, you get a great deal of help and advice. And some groups managed by people share a similar view on certain parts of these subjects, and they're more than happy to shout you down and say, no, you're talking out of your rear. This is the way to do it.
Talking about washing sprues, though, if you were the sort of person who washed your sprues religiously or without fail, there's a possibility you wouldn't have had a problem with that Edward kit.
No, if that's the way you've done your model making, then you may not have encountered the problems that come from that because you've already taken that precaution.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to hurt, is it?
No, it won't hurt at all. Soapy water does not hurt plastic at all.
If that's part of your thing, then that's part of your thing. But to say you have to do it, or to say that you never should do it, both I would say were wrong. An interesting, such a innocuous and inflammable subject becomes so flammable when discussed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I find that very interesting. What other subjects are there out there that inflame?
Painting styles, I think, would be the easiest way of describing it. Color modulations and the Spanish way of doing things and all that sort of stuff.
Pre-shading and panel lines.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. That certainly sparks a conversational five. But again, the same thing applies, really, doesn't it? We spend so much time homing our skills, whichever skills they are, and we get stuck into a rut of that's how we must do things. This is the one thing in which I really want to try and put across in this podcast is, if you have a certain method in which you paint your tank, for example, you bring out the highlights and lowlights and all that sort of stuff in a method that works for you, then great. I have no problem with that at all. And I'm glad it makes you happy, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
But try a different method. Try different ways of doing things, because you might find a part of that skill in which you can modify to fit in with your other skills you already knew, which gives you a better look or better outcome for your model. I bring this to an easy conclusion in a way, in that Luke Carswell just recently did a 148 tank, and he painted it in the style in which he would paint his Warhammer models.
Mm.
And it was quite fascinating to see the journey that he took, and was the effect that he achieved at the end 100% the same as if he'd done everything with an airbrush rather than versus a stick? Was there some things within that journey that he may have learned that he can manipulate in a finer detail way? Yeah, I think there was 100%.
I think he surprised himself with that build, didn't he?
Yeah, he did indeed. And I think that's what people should do. Is the same with me with my conversation just a moment ago about my paints. I got my paints on the walls and blah. I don't dismiss any other paint products. There are some great paint products out there. But what I should really do every now and again is go out of my way and buy a couple of pots of paint and try them and see the difference. I think the other thing with that as well is that what scares me more than anything else is that if I go to another product and go, oh my God, it's just amazing, and all of a sudden my whole range is defunct, that worries me a great deal, because I've already invested that money. I don't want to waste it. So yeah, that I think that maybe puts people off as well.
Going off topic a bit, I don't buy ranges. I have lots of different manufacturers of paint, use different ones for different things. Mm. You know, I've got Citadel, Tamiya, Model Color, Scale 75, the Humbrol stuff, got the Revel stuff, all sorts of different things. And that's because, you know, I'll be out at a show, or I'll be out at a shop and I'll see a couple of paints.
Those are like nice colors. I don't think I have those.
Of course I do.
Invariably.
A bright blue with glittery bits. I don't have those. It doesn't really matter to me, the manufacturer. But coming back to the can of worms thing, I guess, again, it's all about people's opinions and wanting to help. You know, say, well, if you do it my way, then you'll get the same result as me. But that's just not the case, is it?
No.
People live in different climates, temperatures, things are stored differently. Your paints might be different age to somebody else. There's so many different variables.
And I think, although we're purposely not naming names as such, but one thing in which I will take my hat off to somebody for is Will Patterson has had that conversation about paints and about your environment and how it affects the way you do things and et cetera. Oh. And I think we, like going back to what I said earlier, is that's part of our problem, is that we pick up a product and it must work because it works to that person. But you don't take into account the room in which you're in, the environment you're in, the humidity's high, low, whether it's cold, warm, whatever. We don't calculate that. That's not part of our calculation in model making until we've learned to do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, until you've learned to use it yourself. Yeah. I mean, I know that the times I try to spray things on a hot day, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to get a nice finish. People can pick it out and say, oh, you know, your technique's not very good.
Yeah.
Because your paint's drying up. It's just another variable to then cope with, isn't it? Because if you know that it's particularly warm, is it worth trying to find a way around it? Or do you just wait a month or so until it cools down a bit? Or do you add extra retarder to your paint? Do you add extra thinner to your paint? Do you put the air conditioning on? You know, what is the thing that you need to do to get around it? And for me, I don't want that. I don't have the time to work out how to do it.
No, that's right. And I think majority of the products, the vast majority, I would say, are pretty much you can pick it up and crack on with it to a degree. But like you say, there are those days in which it's like super hot.
And it's actually, I think, why cans of worms are opened, because one person will have not a problem with one thing, and then someone else will have a massive issue with it. And so trying to understand each other's situation is almost impossible because the amount of different variables there are.
Partly, but it's knowing those variables, isn't it? I mean, if you're in England, humidity isn't something in which we really would associate with England.
No, other than it's raining all the time.
The environment in which we're in is there all the time, no matter where you are in the world. So, you know, when you're painting, for example, and you've got problems with your paint, airbrush and all that and the other, and the paint drying too quickly, and we don't really calculate that. Most people will go, well, it's a hot day. Once I've sprayed my paint onto my model, it will dry quickly. They don't figure the bit in between.
Right.
Because it's not something which we deal with generally.
Yeah.
Whereas someone in a hot climate would be very much aware of the humidity, very much aware of the difference that a few degrees in that humidity will make to the process in which they're doing.
Or they're completely oblivious to it because it never gets cold. So they never have to deal with cold paint.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it works both ways, doesn't it? I think with most can of worms, it comes down to a level of ignorance to the issue or to why someone would embark on a particular route which would give them the issue. So, like, for example, washing your sprues.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you wash your sprues? I wash my sprues, and I thought everybody did. That's crazy. You must be insane. What sort of weird magic is that? And I think we touched upon it a little bit already in that we as human beings are a bit tribalistic. We're all gatekeepers to a point, aren't we? Let's be honest. I mean, God, that's a can of worms in itself. I can't believe I made the statement. But we are to a degree because we all have a process in which we follow in our models. And when someone does something that's outside of that process, sometimes you're like, what? Why would you do that? That makes no sense. Like, I don't know, painting a figure and not painting the eyes until the last moment or doing your eyes first. Which way is it? Oh, my God.
Yeah. For me, it would come down to someone if they say,
how do I do this figure? Should I do the eyes first or last?
I would then go, well, I personally do them first. I don't wash my sprues or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would be it. It's only when someone puts their foot down and says, always.
Yeah.
That I get a problem with that.
Yeah. That's
always this. It's always that. And then the facts come in. It's like, if you do this, then you're obviously an idiot. And you know, the personal attack start, and then you can just give up because the whole point of the thread's gone.
Yeah, the trigger's been pulled, and you know, it's just a bum fight, isn't it, basically?
Foo fight.
Yeah,
it's very hard to agree to disagree, I suppose, as well. It takes a bit of effort and removing yourself from the situation or the post or the question on social media to agree to disagree. You know, this is my opinion. I've said my piece. Off I go.
I think there's an element of when you get stuck into that can of worms, there's an element of stubbornness that I must prove my point. I must get across to this person I'm speaking to that my opinion is correct and validated. I must validate my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and by having that conversation, is are model makers artists or not? You know, another can of worms.
Yeah.
Again, it all goes all down to your personal view of the hobby, what, you know, what people do, et cetera, et cetera. As to whether you would class them as an artist or not as an artist, or are we just a bunch of middle-aged men fiddling around with plastic? I've just wiped out half our audience. Sorry about that, ladies. But you know what I mean.
Bye. Well, I guess it must be art because people get very passionate about it.
Yeah, I mean, as we've opened that can of worms, I personally agree. I think it is art. It is a form of art. It's a no model. Realistically, most models are not an absolute replica of the subject. They are representations. They're not a replica. So if you're making a replica of something, then there must be of art in that. And by definition, a bit of your own view of that subject. So it's subjected. Mm. So with those two elements, that must be art, right? It's got to be. As far as my small little mind goes. So when someone says you're not, it's not a trigger as such. It's just, I just find it quite weird that people don't see it that way. You know, I won't jump up and down and go, no, you're completely wrong. I think that's the part where the can of worms comes in, isn't it? Is where someone is determined to put you down and to put you in your place as to your opinion is not valid and not welcome, I think would be the right phrases.
I also think that people don't read properly. No. They don't listen properly on the posts and things like that as well. Mm. What we call active listening, isn't it? You just
yeah, it's the joy of social media, isn't it? You know, how many people read the initial post in its entirety to start with and then go through all the comments to see what everyone else has said? Because the amount of times you post something up, the same comment repeated. Yeah, okay, fair enough. It is someone's opinion, and it is someone going, well, this is what I do. But they may have missed third comment down. Someone said exactly the same thing, and someone has already said, oh, yeah, but if you do this, they're like, oh, okay, fair enough. We're very superficial in that way of giving advice. We don't always listen to what everyone else is saying.
I'm very guilty of that myself. If I see a post on something that's asking a question, I know the answer, or someone's asking how what to buy or how do I do this, I will answer it. But I don't generally read what everyone else has put.
No, it's not that.
I'll read the question and I'll put that in and I'll put the answer in, but I won't read what anyone else has put, not because I don't care. It's more that I just haven't got the time to find out what everyone else thinks, because I know what I think.
Don't think it is that reason, Malcolm. I think it's because you read a post and you answer the post and put it in a different format. If you're walking down the road and two people are having a conversation and you hear the question, you don't stand there potentially, you know, say for example, you've got a situation where someone's asking some advice. Where's the bus stop, for example?
Right.
I don't live around here. I'm looking for the number 32 bus. Which bus stop does it go from? Blah, blah, blah. Okay. And you happen to walk past at that moment, and the person that's talking to this says, well, you know, I'm not a friend around here, blah, and you overhear that, you might jump into the conversation and say, oh, it's just over there next to the post office. But what you wouldn't have realised is the person said, oh, I'm not from around here, but I get the bus myself. It's from just outside the post office. Do you know what I mean? It's because you're interacting and you don't in nature go up to a group of people and get involved into the group and go, right, what was the question? What are we talking about?
what we're talking about today. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And social media misses that fact is that you read a post and you go, oh, John's asking me whether I wash my sprues or not. No, I don't. I think it's a waste of time, blah, 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 blah. You know, so you've not read that nine people have already said that and four have said no, you definitely got to wash them and three have got entangled into a complete row. Well, you do actually notice that if you look at it and go, my God, there's 145 comments, but yet there seems to be only three people initially that have spoken. And then you click on the replies and notice that there's 100 where two people are at it with each other.
Well, you would have got a notification from Facebook anyway at that point if you were going to have been with you.
Avoid this conversation. Actually, do you know what? Facebook, they're missing out on a trick, aren't they? If you think about it, right? Now, wouldn't this would be a really good thing for Facebook to add, right? Add a trigger message. So if there's a comment that's been made or a post that's been made and it's clearly visible that a few people have responded to it and someone has had their trigger triggered, they should put a post out saying, oh, this person's been triggered. Now, the reason that's a good idea is because it gives you the ability not to get involved, but also for all those warriors that are sat there at the keyboard waiting to jump on something, it initially gives them the ability to go, oh, I can go and get involved in that conversation. Facebook, you're missing a trick. Triggered button.
Don't they already have something like that? Like you can put in certain words that will alert you if your group has mentioned these words. Like you get an email or something from them. It's used for swear words and stuff like that, I think.
Do you know what? There might be actually. I might look on my Facebook group and throw some words in there that are trigger words that give you an automatic warning.
Yeah. Yes.
If the phrase wash your sprues comes up.
Someone in going off topic again, but someone in a group that I run, we were just discussing something perfectly innocently, and their comment, the usual comment,
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Yeah.
Facebook ripped that out and said it goes against their community standards of violence. What? Yeah, okay. The group didn't take a hit for it, thankfully. But crikey, yeah, not for us to reason why. You know, you get what you pay for with Facebook, let me just say.
Absolutely.
There's so many different things that everyone has. And that's what's great about the hobby, isn't it?
Yeah.
There isn't just one thing that you do. There's not one thing that you use and that will get you a result. And then you do your thing and then you bugger off. Like, oh, I'm going to say it. cross stitch, right? Okay, I'm sure. Oh gosh, I'm sure. Don't laugh. I'm sure there are thousands and hundreds of different types of needles out there, different lengths and colours. And in my mind, there's cross stitch and there's cross stitch, and that's it. You know, it doesn't matter what size needle you use. It doesn't matter what type of thread you use. It doesn't matter what sort of fabric you're cross stitching onto.
Oh my god, we've lost so many listeners all of a sudden.
3% of us, our listeners are female, so I'm not that one. Now, 2%. Sorry, now it's just gone down. From an ignorant point of view, mm-hmm. I can't see the difference between, you know, one's cross stitch or another, and then the difference would be the pattern. So it makes a difference what you're going to use to your experience.
There is the lesson in the whole of the can of worms thing, is at the end of the day, remember that a can of worms generally is based upon ignorance from one side or another, and potentially on both sides, where you can't see the other person's opinion. You haven't had a success of how to do something. Ignorance is an inflammatory word. It's not meant in a nasty way. It's meant that case of you have the opportunity to learn. So learn. If you don't want to learn, acknowledge the fact you don't want to learn, and that will make you ignorant in whatever area that is.
Yeah, you're right. Now, ignorance is used a lot in a negative way. I'm ignorant of certain things, as are you. I am ignorant of cross-stitch.
You have to embrace it, Malcolm. You don't know, for example, that cross-stitch and crocheters have needles and hooks with little lights on the end of them, so they can help see whether they're doing their cross-stitch and crochet.
Lights?
Yeah, they have lights on the end of their needles.
Wow. Why?
I have no idea why, but they do.
Okay. So they can do it in the dark? Power cut resistant cross stitch.
I think that's part of it, yeah.
So if you're going camping, you can still cross stitch even when you're outside.
I might be wrong here, but don't even the diamond art people.
Diamond art people.
The diamond art people. Strange, weird people they are.
You mean diamond artists?
That's the artists, indeed, yes. Or are they artists? Oh, it's a can of worms. They even have their. I don't know what they call them, but the bits that they use to put the diamonds out where they need to go. But I swear to God, I've seen them where they have little lights inside which light up to tell you whether you pushed it in firmly enough or not.
As a bit of advice then, not that we're counsellors or anything, but how would you avoid a can of worms? If you saw a can of worms being opened, what would you do?
Me personally...
I'm asking you.
I generally sit on the sidelines and watch. The interaction intrigues me.
Drama.
Well, yeah, the drama as well. Yes, there is an element of that. More importantly, sometimes you see these cans of worms opened and you see the points of view. And if you've got a relatively open mind, mine's not completely open, but it's fairly open. And you read the comments. There are sometimes you pick up little tips and tricks and stuff that I didn't know you could do that. And then that gives you the opportunity to become less ignorant.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use the word ignorant because it's not a negative word at all. You know, we are all ignorant in some form or another on whatever subjects. And we need to embrace the fact that we don't know everything.
No, always learning.
Always, especially in this hobby.
For me, if I see a can of worms exploding, if I'm not the group admin, I would also sit back and watch. And I think that's because there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can just type to say,
hey, guys, let's just get along.
Let's be friends.
Let's all accept we all have our opinions.
And I can't imagine that happening because it would just be two people just, you know, having a go.
It is the way to bring them together because they round on you. You know what I mean? If you say,
come on, guys. Give each other a hug. Stop being buttercups. You're all fine.
Buttercups.
Everyone will round on you and go, what? Buttercups?
Yeah, call them names. I don't know the answer. Typical Just Making Conversation thing. We talk about something. We haven't got the answers. We're just going to skirt around it in our usual way.
Let us know what cans of worms you've experienced in the hobby. Be interested in reading. Although I will put a proviso on that. Please understand that everyone will have a different version of cans of worms. And they are not there for you to then jump upon and create a can of worms situation. So, yes, let's all learn what subjects we may or may not wish to get involved in. And no spats. We won't tolerate spats. You're talking about as an admin on a group, every time something like that happens, I jump on it immediately and pretty much squash it because I don't want that in my group. That I don't find that helpful.
The conflict, you mean?
I don't mind the conversation as long as it's a conversation, but that's rare, if I'm honest. It does happen. It does.
Yeah. Human beings being humans, actually.
Mm-hmm. But talking about Foo Fights, not that's a good segue, but I'm going to go with it. Yes, it's time for Walnut Challenge Update.
Yay. A jingle, haven't we?
We have.
Do you want to do it live every time, or do you want to use the pre-recorded ones?
No, you just use that one.
Okay.
Fine. I can't remember what I did last time, so no.
Well, it sounds a lot like this.
Walnut Challenge Group Build!
The Walnut Challenge Group Build. Wow.
Yeah.
What excitement that's becoming.
Oh, dude, I can't even at the moment. I can't even. I've got things to say. You've got things to say. You go first.
Okay, well, update is the Walnut Challenge Group Build Facebook page has now 54 members, so congratulations to everyone that's joined in. Those of you who are listening that haven't, head over there and join in the group and get inspired, because it really is quite inspiring what people are thinking of doing. Plus also, I had a conversation. I was at a model show last weekend, that being the whatever date it was, the 8th of May, which was the Milton Keynes model show. Good show, guys. Well done, everyone, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Did you have a good time?
Oh, I had a very good time. I did.
All right. Anything interesting happen?
No, not really. Yeah. I may have won a class or something. I can't remember. Yeah, the Moosaroo Bill was there. Thank you for everyone's feedback on it. We've gone off on a tangent, but one particular person said that, it looks a lot better in person than it did described on your podcast. So.
That's good.
Yeah, no, it was good. I won a little class medal.
Well done. Well done, James. Very well deserved.
Yeah, we love that. But anyway, getting back to our nuts, we had a numerad of people come and see me on the table that I was on, where I had a box of nuts. If you wanted to, you could come and grab yourself some nuts to help you with the build. And if you managed to talk to me and I convinced you, I ended up giving you nuts anyway. So Ed, Neil, Adam, Clive, and numerous other people, thank you for picking up your nuts. And good luck with the challenge.
Ooh. I did notice when you brought the box back that it was much emptier than it was before. Did anyone eat any, I wonder?
Not that I saw.
Okay.
There was a scramble for the ones that were pre-opened, but I wouldn't allow anyone to take those.
Yeah, I noticed they were just
They were just examples of that. Although I know somebody, Clive, took a couple that were open. But yeah, that's fine.
Cool. So people took walnuts and they were excited about the walnut build. That's good.
Yeah. There was a lot of chat about it. And if no one didn't mention it, I did bring it up in conversation with everyone I spoke to. I'll be honest, if anyone knows me, they will know that I'm really, really bad with names. So I apologize. I didn't stand there with a clipboard writing people's names down. There were a couple of people there that were not overly convinced in the challenge, but were bullied. I'm not going to lie. I pinned them down. Stuffed nuts into their pockets and all sorts. I had to be careful how I said that. The challenge has been set to them. So I hope they rise to the challenge.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Well, that's well done. Well done for singing that song for us. Mm. I'm interested in talking about what's going on the Facebook group. Justin Ryan has put in his works in progress for his... Let me describe this for you, okay? I don't know if you've seen it, James, but... I'm looking at a picture of a walnut. Okay, it's the bottom half of a walnut. Nothing strange about that.
Uh-huh.
But in that walnut is the sea. And in the middle of the sea is a rocket capsule with the big balloons that keeps it afloat, right? And above it, hovering, a Sea King.
Wow.
An American Navy
wow.
Sea King. Or
that is the Sea King, you're right.
All within the walnut.
Uh-huh.
And it looks really, really good. He's also, Mr. Ryan, has also done two intruders, the A6, I'm assuming they are, A6 intruders.
No, I think they are, yeah.
And they are in flight on a starry night flying across the sea over land. And he's called it Roger, feet dry. And he says it's 90% complete. And it's quite an amazing thing. Go and have a look.
Yeah.
He hasn't quite finished it yet, but maybe by the time this comes out, he will have. And also, there was discussion about hinges.
Yes. Now, would you expect to be listening to a model-making podcast that would be discussing hinges on walnuts?
On this one, yeah. There's been discussion about where you get the best hinges. And Steve Lidstone has come up with a link that you can buy 100 hinges.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny, tiny hinges that are used for jewelry boxes and dolls' houses, things like that. That seems to be what a lot of people are going with.
Yeah.
So you will have lots of spares, but, you know, hey, we all need a good hinge, I suppose.
Everybody needs a good hinge, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I haven't considered my hinge. I was just going to go raw and natural and just have a flappy top. I think. I don't think there was even a consideration in my mind of a hinge.
No, there has been a lot of talk about hinges, and I got to be honest, I was thinking of using a bit of Plasticard as a hinge.
Plasticard?
So plastic card. In fact, actually, the other person on the Facebook page, Mike Alabaster, has started to gain all the stuff he needs for his build, and he's going to be using some Blackburn Buccaneers on his, which are 1/700th. And they look pretty cool, I got to be honest.
That's just ridiculous. He's got a box there. He's showing the box on the Facebook. He says that there's four in there, but does that mean he's going to put four inside it?
I don't know. Could it be a display of Buccaneers? That could be interesting.
Fucking hell.
I've got to say, well done to the guys that have got us rocking on it straight away, because it's really inspirational. So well done.
How about your personal walnut build? What's happening there?
Well, I've been very quiet on the bench the last few weeks because of personal bits and pieces. But my nuts are on the bench and they are cleaned out to a degree.
Okay.
And I will be, hopefully this weekend, playing with them. Yeah, I've got an idea with one that's going to need some steps into my nuts.
Yes.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut the nut itself and try and cut the pieces to create the steps themselves.
Ah.
So all recyclable nuts, apparently.
Got you.
But yeah, that's as far as I've got with it. Not very far at all, if I'm honest. I need to crack on because we need to really start upping the game here.
Yeah, you need to start getting involved.
I know there's a lot more people out there that are wanting to get involved than 54 members. So yeah, I'm going to plug it again. Go on, guys. Go over to the Walnut Challenge Group Build Facebook page and join. Even if it's just to show your support, I guarantee you, you'll go there.
I'm just going to show my support. I'm not going to... Oh, I'm going to build a nut now.
Yes.
That, to be honest, has been the most exciting part of it so far for me. Mm. Is you have a conversation with someone and go, oh, yeah, have you heard about the walnut challenge? What's that? Oh, well, you get a walnut, split it in half, and you build a diorama inside it. What? Really? Oh, you're insane. I don't want to do that. No, think about it. It's really good. Well, I am thinking about it. I know. I can see in your eyes. I can see your brain ticking over. And he's like, actually, that's giving me an idea. Oh, yeah, lots of that. It's great. Love it.
Absolutely.
The one thing we haven't done, Malcolm, not that we're opening another can of worms in any way, shape, or form, but other podcasts, I know you're listening. Come on. You know you want to get involved. It's a walnut. It won't take long. You'll be taking your walnuts to Omaha and showing everybody how amazing you are with your nuts. So the challenge is out there, boys. Don't let us down. Get a little bit of pre-building in before the Moosaroo have you answered the email, Malcolm.
What email?
I don't do the
admin stuff.
I haven't done it for you because you're volunteering yourself. I can volunteer you. It's not a problem.
But going back to the walnuts. I know for a fact that the other podcasts are considering individually getting involved, but not as a podcast.
Oh no, I mean individuals, not. I don't. No. Let's clarify that. When I say come on, podcast guys, get involved, what I mean is I know how many of you are involved in each podcast, so I expect an entry from
what each podcast individually or each person.
No, not an individual podcast. This is our entry, because let's face it, as a group build. Opening a walnut, filling it, etc., around a table. wouldn't take very long with all of you involved. So, no, you can all do one individually. You know you can. You'll do one and you'll suddenly go, but I've had other crazy ideas I want to do. So there'll be more than one. I know there will. Mr. Finch, the Godfather, I'm pointing my finger at you as I speak.
Me? Oh, yeah, sure. Well, what I'm doing...
Sorry, I missed the cue. Malcolm, what are you going to be doing for the Walnut Challenge? Have you got something in mind?
I do, James, I do. I'm glad you asked me. Got a bit of a quandary.
Oh.
Because the... I had an idea, and I started work on it already. And I showed a few people, and immediately they said...
Oh, that's against the rules.
You're breaking your own rules?
Yes, listen, I said, don't worry, the rules don't say that everything has to be within inside the walnut.
Oh, no.
And they said,
yes, it does. Everything has to be inside the walnut.
And I said, oh, I don't think so. Let me just go and get the rules for you and copy and paste them. I know the rules because I wrote them. Anyway, so I copy and paste them into this little chat box we were all sharing. And yeah, I was wrong. I written the rules and then I went and broke them immediately. So it will be an illegal entry, but it's an entry nonetheless. So I'm building something that is mostly going to be on the outside of the walnut. And if I show you what it is, then you will let me carry on because it's a great, great idea. But I know it's a great idea because it was my idea. For you to understand, this is going to make great podcasts. But if I put it...
Watch very carefully, everyone.
If I put it like this, and then if I put that on there, now, will you better see that, I wonder?
Right. Yeah.
You see that? That's the top.
Is this what I think it is?
I'm showing James a walnut with a thing on it.
Yeah, this is what I thought it was. Yeah, okay. Are you all following everyone? Yeah.
Okay. So...
Okay, let's just...
Yeah.
Let's recap a second. So the rules are broken by what you're showing me, but where does it say that in the rules? So
it says the diorama must be inside the walnut. The walnut must be able to close.
It must be able to close. It doesn't say it has to be inside it.
It does. This is the same trap I fell into.
Really?
Yes. I pinned the post that has the rules. Here we go. Make a diorama entirely inside of your walnut. It's the first sentence, James. It's the first sentence.
Mr. C, what did you think?
Anyway, screw it. I don't care. It's just going to be a legal entry. So what I'm trying to show James is a Bandai TIE Fighter in, gosh knows what scale, 1/44th probably. And instead of the actual round part of the TIE Fighter, it's going to be a walnut instead. I've got one that had been started that I purchased a couple of years ago. So I've taken the TIE Fighter parts, the big solar panels on each side, taken those off, the doors and the window at the front off, and that is all going to get stuck to a walnut. So it's going to be like a walnut TIE Fighter. I've even got a little TIE Fighter pilot, which isn't Darth Vader, but it's a little TIE Fighter pilot to put inside. And that is going to be one of my walnut builds. So it will have stuff inside it, but it will be on the outside. It'll still be fun. But the one that I'm doing for the inside is also Star Wars related. Can you see that?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what that is?
That's the Death Star.
It is, yes. I've been hollowing out very, very carefully this walnut with very careful dexterousness. And what I do is the inside of this Death Star that I've got, it actually fits inside of this walnut like that, okay? So what I'm going to do is then cut away on the outside of this walnut, so there's a hole, so it looks like the walnut is being rebuilt in Star Wars. And then on this side, there'll be a little hole with a little satellite dish inside to make it look like a death nut.
Wow.
That's another idea, yeah. And the other one involves electronics, but I haven't quite worked out what I'm going to do. I'm sure it'd be very easy to do. I'm not quite sure. Oh, I could.
You just had a thought, haven't you?
Did you hear it?
Yeah, did you?
Everything went weird. I could light the inside of the TIE Fighter.
Oh, I'm sat here thinking to myself, not the TIE Fighter.
But light the inside of the Death Star.
You're creating the Death Star inside the walnut where it's being built, correct? There you go. So you just need a flickery little, like someone's welding.
Well, fiber optic, like a micro. Well, no, I can't.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've got an even better thought. You can put your Death Star on a plastic tube or something, because then you could run your fiber optic inside it, up into your Death Star. but then you could have the light on another bit of tube with a TIE fighter flying away from it.
I could, yeah, I could have them both.
Perspective.
Yeah, one's bigger than the other.
You could have both your nuts suspended on a base.
Huge possibilities. But yeah, I'm on the way with those two builds. Sanding my nuts loads today. I spent an entire 2 hours sanding these nuts down. So now they've got a bloody flat spot on one side and a flat spot on the other. So to put the doors together. Explain that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to be honest, I have fallen foul of your own rules, because I generally look at the rules and look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 section, not the actual paragraph but above, because in the numbered section it doesn't actually say it's got to be within your nut.
The very
very first sentence.
The very first sentence introducing what the build is.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, says. Make a diorama entirely inside your walnut. That's the entire point.
See, now, the problem I've got now is because I haven't told you this.
Oh.
So, one of the ideas I had was to do with Star Wars, which you're aware of.
Uh-huh.
Which I have mentioned, I believe.
Okay.
But I had a brainwave the other day while I was at work. And I was actually discussing with someone about CAD work and how to do it to create 3D printed objects and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I had an amazing idea that wouldn't it be fun to have a dragon coming out of my nut?
Yeah.
Right? So like for example, it's a dragon's egg and the baby dragon is coming out of said egg.
That's fine.
Well, no, it's not.
Why?
Because the idea was I was going to keep the shell. So the two halves were together.
Yeah.
And I was going to break three areas.
But it's still inside the walnut.
Well, it's not, because what would come out of the walnut would be the dragon's face. And then either side would be his wings.
Well, that's just the way that the diorama is. That's fine. It's fine. Just do it anyway. Just enter it. Screw the rules.
Looking at the rules, it would imply that I have to make it so that the nut opens, and then when it closes, the wings fold up and it all goes back inside the entire nut.
You're thinking beyond what the rules are. You know, you're taking a great idea and going with it, and I think you should still carry on despite what the rules say. It's not like you've had to pay to enter.
I'm going to.
And it's not like there's a prize that you're not going to get.
Well, there is a prize. There's a great big bag of nothing that'll never be posted out, but that's not the point.
There's no prize. Just do it. Just do something really cool.
I mean, this bag of nothing's been collected for a long period of time.
The only rules, as long as it can be fully closed, yeah, it's a real walnut you're going to use. That's all fine. Use any media. That's fine. Enter as many completed projects as you wish. Combined work on nut projects is accepted. The only bit you're breaking is the boundary.
The first rule said about the boundary. Yeah.
Rule number one. Yes, but this is the boundary of that nut. You're taking itself past. And I think that is absolutely fine.
In fairness, in our last podcast, we did suggest that actually think outside the rules.
Yeah.
Because the rules are only there to be looked over.
Nobody's going to be disqualified, you know?
No.
I would take an issue with somebody not using a walnut.
Yeah, or 3D printing one. I think that was the main thing, wasn't it?
Well, if the build is just a 35th scale Sherman on a nice base with no walnut in sight, I might have an issue with it. but yeah, a real walnut needs to be involved, and go crazy. Just have fun with it, mate. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, I like those ideas. I didn't know about those.
So that, I don't know if you can see. That's what it's going to kind of look like. I mean, it's
yeah, and that. That just screams to me, welder.
There's not going to be a welder in it. It doesn't.
Really does. You can. But, you
no.
Can. It's just electricity. You can do it.
Well, like Dr. Malcolm says in Jurassic Park, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to sort out some fiber optics for you and send it to you.
I would send them back. I wouldn't accept them. When they arrived, I would say, no, I'm not accepting this package from Mr. Skiffins. Send it back.
So anyway, that's our update for the Walnut Challenge group build. And if you are struggling to get hold of some nuts, as it says in the rules, by all means, throw a comment over to Malcolm, because he has a surprising amount of nuts in which he may be able to send you some for a small donation to cover the postage, obviously. But yeah, we'll happily help you, depending on customs and all that sort of stuff. But yeah.
Get in touch. They're easy to find. You can just buy them on the internet or health shops. You know, underground walnut dealers are all over the place.
Yes. Yeah, be careful from the underground walnut dealers. They sometimes can be a bit dodgy. You might end up with some pistachios. They'll palm anything off them walnut underground people.
Imagine that. Sorry, they're pistachios. Oh, that bastard. He sold me these as walnuts. Am I still using them?
But there you go. Yes, get involved, guys. And thank you for everyone that has already. We're having fun with this. Social media has a lot to answer for. Us modelers need to talk face-to-face to discuss and iron out arguments. Social media just seems to be a pressure cooker of opinions.
As human beings, we are naturally conflicting and tribalistic, always looking to demonstrate and inflict our prowess on other tribes. There will be those that enjoy the drama and will not suffer fools gladly. Some of us work hard to take the high road, agreeing to disagree and to live and let live.
Next time, we'll be just making conversation about model stashes. Is it time to stash or cash them in? You've been listening to Just Making Conversation with
James Skiffins
and Malcolm Childs.
Follow us on Facebook, where we post photos, updates, and other nonsense.
Find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and all the others.
And let us know what you are just making and what your thoughts are on the conversation on this episode.
Thank you to the following supporters from buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast.
John, Julian, Chuck, Tim, Mark Bakawahi, Simon the Jersey Gent, Steve Lee Costas, Mark Ray, Neil, Mike Robert, Andrew Drew, John, Mike, Jeff, Richard Lynn, Gordon, and six others.
If you do show your support, leave your name and we can give you a shout out too.
Goodbye.
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 Goodbye. Goodbye. Take care.
Could you imagine if we released an unedited, raw version of Just Making Conversation?
We should do that just for fun. Just once.
What? You
just whack it out there.
I don't think I could bring myself to do it. Like with my squeaky chair and rubbing the desk. And maybe in a time where I haven't got much time to edit something, we could say, right, we're going to do it raw.
Yes.
It's going to be bareback. We're going to go in dry. And deep. So buckle up, buttercup.
Thank you.